Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for March 2018. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the bearded cinephile, Tim Nelson.
That sounds so scary.
It does,
I'm like, watch out, hide your kids.
Right, exactly.
Hide your wife.
But you got a great
bearded
beard
cinephile
going on.
Coming down the street.
Watch out for the bearded cinephile.
That's terrifying, John. I don't know if I like that title at
all. I'll never use it again. Tim, we're back. How exciting is this? We took a month off because of the Oscars, and we are officially back. I'm so pumped.
I feel refreshed.
Yes.
Ready for a new season. I'm feeling like I have a better feeling about this year than last year, to be honest.
Me too. Totally. Yeah, because last year was a bit of an off year. But I mean, it got a little better towards the end, but I feel like there's like this is going to be the rebound year where we're going to consistently see good movies.
While we were, you know, doing Academy Awards stuff, mm-hmm. and between our last podcast and Academy Awards, this phenomenon occurred called The Black Panther.
The Black Panther.
Yeah.
How much money has this movie made?
I can't keep track of
that. Unbelievable. I know it's the highest grossing superhero movie ever made already, but I mean, it's somewhere like 600 or 700 million domestically already, and it's insane. Insane. Yep. So there's that. And that will be my way of convincing you that we should do a podcast on the Infinity War in a couple months. Because I know that normally you would like resist it like the plague, but Black Panther's in it. And this is like a cultural moment. Like it's everything Marvel has been leading up to. You know, got to do it. Tim's looking at me like over my dead body.
So if I'm going to podcast on this, you realize what that means for me. I'm the guy who hasn't watched them all.
Right.
So what that means is that when you say we're going to podcast on this, for you, that commits you to pretty much going to see the movie. Uh-huh. For me, that commits me to like 23 movies.
Okay? But you've seen a lot of them.
Aren't there 20?
There's a lot. Yes, there's a lot. But you don't have to see them all. I would go back and just watch like the first one, you know, of every one.
So do I have to watch like Ant-Man and stuff like that?
Ant-Man's a great movie.
There's a lot of great movies. This is a lot. Like, I feel like
they're consistently great movies.
So I think we should do it.
You should get started now.
We should do it. Yeah.
See, you should watch two a week.
I haven't watched any Thor. I haven't watched. Thor's, I watched a little bit of Iron Man until I got tired of metal robots fighting each other all the time. Whatever they are, suits.
Right.
And I'm not hating. I'm not hating.
Yeah, yeah.
I've watched my Guardians. That's two. Uh-huh. Well, and I've got how many Hulks do I have to watch?
No, Hulk had only one standalone movie with Edward Norton, and that's universally shunned as not even like a part of the universe. So don't even worry about that.
So I don't have to.
You don't have any Hulks. Just Thor's, Iron Man's, Captain America.
Oh no! I've Avengers. Watched one of those.
Look, here's the thing. I'm gonna pick up the slack, so you don't have to watch them all. I've seen every one of them. I will pick up the slack where you know need it. It's all good. We'll work as a team.
Infinity War.
Two months from now. All right.
I can do it in 2 months. I can watch all of them. I might.
You could.
I'm gonna try, and I can. My son will like help push me along because he always begs me to watch them.
I think by the end of it, my hope is that you'll see how beautiful these superhero movies are that I always talk about. I always talk about how I love them. Maybe that by the end you'll be on board. Maybe we'll see.
I don't know.
All right, so that was a tangent, but here we are. We are officially not going to talk about the Oscars because that is so last season. If you missed our big Oscar tweet fest, I would highly encourage you to go on our Cinema Faith Twitter feed. It's still there. You can see every single fun, witty quote from Tim and Dan and myself. I'm the sincere tweeter, but they had some great jokes, and I would recommend you going through that. So, and I also did a little bit of an Oscar recap with my best of 2017.
Ooh, I haven't looked at that yet.
Yep. It's all on the site. Check it there. We're moving past the Oscars because this is basically a brand new season of film. It's 2018, and we're raring to go.
All right. We're leaving it behind, but go look at it anyway.
Exactly.
All right.
Take 2 moments to be nostalgic and then join us on
board.
We're
not wasting any class time on this.
Yes.
You can go back to your notes.
Unfortunately, though, we have to start off the year on a bit of a sour note, okay? Because this podcast was originally going to be on a movie called A Wrinkle in Time. Because why not? It's the biggest release of the month. Anticipation was through the roof. Everyone's talking about it. But there's just one problem with A Wrinkle in Time. Tim, do you know what that problem is?
Oprah? No, I don't know. I like Oprah, actually. But
no, it's a terrible movie.
Yes.
It's really bad.
How bad is it, John?
So bad, Tim. I completely underestimated how bad it was going to be. All right, let me set the scene for you. I get this text from Tim before I saw it, okay? I get this text. Let me tell you, I'm gonna quote your text verbatim. This is what it said. Can we review a different film? Wrinkle in Time is crap, according to everyone, everywhere, in every dimension.
Yeah.
That was Tim's text.
So that was the first thing I heard. And then my wife went and saw it with my son.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because my son, we promised it was like a privilege. And of course, he loves it because he likes every movie. He would give you, he'd give an A to every movie he ever saw.
My 10-year-old's the same way.
And my wife comes back and she's like, she just shook her head and looked at me. And she's like, you can't see that movie. And it wasn't like you can't review that movie.
Yeah.
She said, you cannot see it.
See it. Right.
She didn't want me to see the movie. She's like I said, she's like, there's a car accident and it's up the road and it's a terrible thing.
No.
And you can't unsee this.
Yes.
Turn the car around.
Yep.
And keep driving back home. That's how bad. And I've never had.
Wow.
I've never had my wife, who's a very
she's a discerning,
metered,
yeah,
discerning person,
yeah,
ever tell me like, turn around, don't watch this movie. That's bad.
It's bad. And I will admit to all of our listeners right here now that I thought Tim was overreacting, and I, as the editor of Cinema Faith, politely scolded him and reminded him that this is a big movie and it's our duty on the website to cover even the bad movies, because inside I was thinking, look, it's probably not that bad. I love the novel. I'm sure it's okay. And we went ahead, and then I actually saw the movie, and about 10 minutes in, I realized how bad this journey was going to be. And about 30 minutes in, I officially decided that we're not podcasting on this movie. And I basically spent a good chunk of the time racking my brains on what we could podcast on when I was supposed to be immersed in this film. It was so bad, Tim. Honestly, I would say it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I would put it like bottom 50 right now.
Wow.
I will say that I don't see a lot of bad movies because, you know, I'm a diehard Rotten Tomatoes adherer. So I'm usually the worst the movie gets for me is like just good. But it was that bad. So I do want to think that our listeners would like me to elaborate on why it was bad. So
yes,
if you
yes.
don't mind, could I do just a few minute rant on the reasons I did not like the movie?
So to clarify, I didn't see the movie.
Because you didn't see it. Right, exactly.
Because I listened to the voice of moral reason in the
yes.
form of my wife.
Yeah.
And I tried to dissuade you.
He tried. You heard that
I'm
text.
Like, it's a cliff, man.
Yeah.
It's a cliff. And
yeah.
you're like, no, no.
Yep.
We
yep.
owe it to them. And then you fell off the cliff. And as you're falling, you're looking for a movie that we could watch instead, right?
That's exactly what happened. Yep.
So you're going to tell us why not to see this
yes,
movie.
Yes, I'm going to tell you why. So I'm sorry to, you're going to have to sit this one out just for a few minutes, Tim, all right?
I'll hang out and listen.
All right, here's the thing. Wrinkle in Time. Begin rant. The first scene isn't bad. The Disney logo switches over to, you know, this like you're wrinkling. I thought that was clever. And the first scene is like this little backstory with Chris Pine as Meg's dad. I loved it. I like Chris Pine. And it was great. But from that, that's probably the only good scene in the movie. From then on, everything starts going off track. So here's the thing. One of the central problems is that when you ever you're moved from the ordinary world to the special world, you need some sense of like that journey, right? That you're journeying from everything that is normal to this special new reality. It's like the magic needs to slowly settle in. And this thing just plunges you straight into the zany. Like Reese Witherspoon just comes bombing in this crazy weird sheet, spouting off lines that sound like so unnatural. And then from then on, they're just like, oh, here we go. There's two other witches. There's Oprah. There's Mindy Kaling. And all three of them I thought were horribly miscast. I mean, I don't know if it was that they were miscast. I don't know if they didn't understand the characters, but every one of them felt like they were reading their lines. And Oprah as this like larger than life, literally, like she's like 10 times the size of every other character, like reading these lines that are hokey as heck. Not good. Okay. Not good.
So can I,
yeah,
I read some reviews on it, 'cause I was like prepping,
mm-hmm.
right? For the,
you were,
I was getting ready.
Thank you.
So I heard some critics, well, actually quite a few critics really liked Reese Witherspoon.
Really?
So why do you any ideas?
I can't put my finger on why. I don't know. I honestly can't. I can't put it into words, but like from the minute that she started talking as her character, I was like, I don't buy this. I just don't buy it at all. The special effects were like surprisingly second rate. Like it was some sort of student film that they were like painting like the props together. Reese Witherspoon turns into this big green leaf at one point, and it is the most ridiculous cartoonish thing I've ever seen. They strip away all references to God and faith in the movie fine, right? I mean, I'm not expecting them to make a Christian movie, but, you know, they just turn it kind of into, like, the universe is inside of all of us and you have to believe in yourself. And it's just, the thing that sucks about that is that Madeline Lingle, I thought, really incorporated faith in a really subtle, powerful way in the book. And I felt like they could have at least attempted that path, and they just totally went in another direction. But okay, here's what really got me. Let me get to the heart. I'm going to get to the heart of my criticism. The trip to Kamazat in the book is absolutely where everything, like, churns awesome in the book. Like, it is the most exciting pivot. And they completely botched the journey to Kamazat. Like, it's not scary at all. In the book, it is so creepy. They're all, like, these kids are synchronized and everything, and you've got this creepy guy with red eyes that's, like, it's so unsettling. But they went for this PG version of Kamazat. They churned the red-eyed guy into Michael Pena on a beach. I'm like, what? Calvin is supposed to be hypnotized, right? But instead of, like, of this gradual, like, Calvin, like, churning into zombie Calvin, like, gradually, he just all of a sudden flips over and he's just, like, bratty Calvin. Like, they completely ruined Kamazat. And then here's the thing, the creepiest part of the book is when you get into that room with that disgusting, like, pink brain just, like, sitting on a table running this whole planet. And they completely disregarded that because, again, PG for some reason, can't go there. So they made it all instead this one giant room where the whole room is a brain and Meg is inside the brain, again, holding on to these, like, props that look like, you know, fifth graders, like, painted them. And, like, so she's inside the brain. Just every single thing that was interesting or magical or fascinating about the book is completely ruined. It was a colossal disappointment. So I would honestly give it somewhere around like a C- if I was grading it. It's terrible. And that's it. That's my rant. I'm sorry. A lot of bad energy just came out. All right, let's regroup. Let's get back. Thanks for letting me do that, Tim. I'm sorry. I had to get it off my chest. Now? I feel a little better. Like, I've expelled, like, the Green Mile.
Kind of catharsis?
You know, like, the butterflies have gone out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're an admirer of the book. I mean, it's got to be a bummer for you,
well,
right?
I haven't read the book for like 30 years.
Okay. Well, so, but so you, like, remember.
I was a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are some of these critiques mm-hmm. because this movie was marketed to children?
Maybe. I mean, they purposely did. I mean, right, with the PG rating and the Disney and everything, I guess they were, and it didn't feel like the book always felt like it was straddling that line of being more for, like, teens to adults, right? As compared to the movie, which does feel skewed more towards kids. I think that is part of it, yeah. But I just don't get it either, because Ava DuVernay, I'm probably butchering that name, sorry, but she's a great director. She made Selma. She made the 13th, you know, the documentary. I don't know whether it was the size of or the scale of it just, like, was overwhelming for her. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't know anything about the development. I gave up. As soon as you gave up, I tapped out too, and we're like, what's the next one?
So anyway, that's Wrinkle in Time. We're going to now pretend that it doesn't exist, and we are going to switch gears now and talk about the movie that we switched to at the last minute. And because thankfully there was a good movie that came out in March. There was another one, and we convinced the reviewer who was going to do it to give it to us. Thank you. And here we go.
He's a man.
And we are going to talk about Annihilation. Annihilation. That's it. Are you ready, Tim?
I'm ready.
Here we go. So Annihilation is written and directed by a dude named Alex Garland. Alex Garland has written and directed two movies, Annihilation this year and Ex Machina from 2014. But prior to that, he actually had a writing career. He was a novelist.
Right.
He wrote The Beach. Now, yes. I've never seen it. You saw that.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, is it a good movie? Like, I've heard so mixed reactions to
it's
The Beach.
It's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Now, he didn't direct that movie. He just wrote the novel. But, I mean, that's cool. Like, he was, he's a novelist. And they made a movie adaptation off of it. And, yeah.
I guess it was a pretty important novel. It's hard to talk about his novel by only watching someone else's movie of his novel.
Right, exactly.
There's going to be a lot of that, I think, tonight. Because we're going to talk about lots of novels and influences and people who were novelists and became directors. And it's going to get weird,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That's okay. Just hang in there with us. But, no, it was pretty good. And people have compared that to kind of like a Gen X version of like Conrad's Heart of Darkness, which we always kind of return to because so many directors have used that kind of like as a blueprint for their film.
That was what Apocalypse Now is based off of.
Yeah, most famously, yep. Apocalypse Now. And the idea of like going into something that's an unknown quantity where you could lose your mind.
Mm.
Do you see some connections already?
Definitely.
So, so that's kind of the beach could be that way. It's like you're going somewhere, you don't know what to expect. You get there, it might be utopian, it might be dystopian. You're not quite sure what's going on, but all the rules seem to be bent.
And well, he has also has a pretty prolific screenwriting career too, because he did 28 Days Later, which I thought was a pretty one of the better zombie flicks out there. Remember that with Cillian Murphy, and then he did another movie with Cillian Murphy called Sunshine, which I remember liking a lot in college. And then he finally took the plunge away from just writing to writing and directing with Ex Machina. Now I didn't love Ex Machina as much as a lot of people did. That came out in 2014. I know there were a lot of people who are like diehard fans of that film. I didn't like love it. I liked it, but it was highly reviewed. What do you remember about that movie?
One of the things I like about these two films, and I'll talk about Ex Machina, first, is that he's a master of suspense and tension.
Oh yeah.
And so I think he wants to lead with sci-fi as being like, oh, I'm real strong in sci-fi. But in reality, like, I feel like tension is where he's really good. So
completely agree.
So where you're like palm sweating kind of stuff.
Totally.
And I feel like Ex Machina did that really well. And I feel like this film did that really well, where you feel like your skin crawling and you want out of a situation, but you're just sitting at home or in a theater and you're like, wait a minute, I'm okay. But then you're like, no, I'm not. And so building up kind of tension, he's excellent at. And so I would say, like, from Ex Machina, what I remember not so much, I don't remember so much all the, because it's getting in kind of the ethics. What does it mean to be a human? What are the ethics that we haven't thought through on AI? And all these different, like, what makes a soul? All these kind of ideas. These are, like, big ideas. They're, like, campfire ideas. Oh, you know, that, you know, you might talk about when you are deeply pondering the universe or whatever you're doing. It's a kind of armchair philosopher ideas.
Totally.
And so but that is not what, like, makes that film move. What makes that film move is, like, is this robot going to kill him?
Right.
Is he being manipulated?
Yeah, exactly.
What's happening here? Who's who? Mm-hmm. Who's good? Who's evil? Mm-hmm. So it's that suspense and that tension that you get. So I feel like those are the strengths. It's not like where some films have to, like, lead with ideas.
Yep.
It seems like this director, like, kind of pretends to lead with ideas, but really is strong in suspense. So I know that sounds bad.
No.
And I'm not degrading it, but I think there's stuff I think there's filmmakers that are higher minded.
Mm-hmm.
Who are not as good as suspense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's good at that. And it happens to be he happens to do sci-fi.
He also has a very good visual sense as a director. Like, I think his just mastery of the lens, every shot is beautiful in both films. I think. So
give that to some of that to your cinematographer, but yeah.
Right. And I totally agree that, like, he kind of uses big ideas as an excuse for suspense, but he definitely is no stranger to big existential themes. I mean, like, if you're going to call Annihilation anything, you could kind of call it an existential thriller, right? I think that would be probably your...
Sure. So it's not like just, it's not just like any sci-fi it is, but, like, the ideas are not big ideas. Because we're talking, this is something I complained about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get to the Arrival comparison yet? We don't have to.
Take it wherever you want to go. I want to get to the plot so we don't.
So my mom can,
you know, understand what the heck we're talking
Lord.
About.
I really mean that as a prayer. Help us tonight. So, yeah. So, like, I guess, yeah. Can you give us a summary? What the heck?
Yep.
What's this movie about?
Yes. Annihilation. All right. Here we go. And then we'll circle back to Arrival and, yes, and Ex Machina, because that applies too. So, the plot's actually a pretty straightforward commercial plot. So, there's this extraterrestrial comet that's flown into this lighthouse, and it's created this weird shimmer. So this, like, kind of halo globe thing that is engulfing part of this land, and it's spreading, okay? And so the government doesn't know what the heck it is, doesn't know why it's there, and they keep sending teams into it, but none of those teams ever come back. So something's happening to them inside the shimmer, but one person comes back, and that is Natalie Portman is the main character, and she plays Lena. Her husband, Oscar Isaac, is the one person who comes back from the shimmer. He's basically been missing on this top secret mission, and then suddenly he's back. He randomly shows up in her house, but he's different. Something's different about him, and then he gets sick, and the army scoops him back up. And basically, where the plot goes from there is that Lena volunteers to be a part of a crew that goes back into the shimmer to try to figure out what the heck is going on, and from Lena's perspective, so she can figure out how to save her husband, who is now, you know, sick and dying in this sort of army hospital. So that's the main plot. So they go into the shimmer, and from what happens there, I will not spoil because it's a crazy journey. So, yeah.
We can't talk about Inside the Shimmer.
I mean, we can get into some specifics, but I mean,
I love
you don't want
to. Inside the Shimmer.
Inside the Shimmer. But it's a fun premise. It's creepy. It's interesting.
It's been done before.
All right, where?
It's just a Heart of Darkness theme.
Yes.
But it's not just a Heart of Darkness theme. I think of Close Encounters. I think of Arrival. Like I said before, it's like they go into the spaceship, right?
That's true. Yeah.
So, like, to me, it's not like. And then I heard another review that compared this to the Predator.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I know. Wasn't that cool? Yeah, Somebody picked up on that. I was like, oh, yeah. It's kind of like the Predator but with some women scientists.
Or even Alien. Kind of that. Or Alien. Probably Aliens.
It is like Aliens.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like where you're exploring this realm where people have sort of been there and died and horrific things have happened. And you're just kind of like unraveling the pieces of it. Yeah.
Trying to figure out some rules.
Yep. Right.
Out of it. And so, yeah. So I think there is something to that. And then like the whole idea of slowly getting picked off.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to there. I'm not spoiling anything. No. I'm just trying to talk about Inside the Shimmer now. So I hope I'm all right.
You're good. We're going to go deep into these themes that we've been talking about, but I want to stay on the surface just for a second. Let's talk about acting. Tim, are you or are you not a Natalie Portman fan?
I don't know. She's all right.
Okay.
I like some of her stuff. I like actually one of my favorite roles is she plays. The critics panned this film, but it was one of her earlier works, and I'm trying to forget what it's. I'm totally forgetting what it's called.
Oh no, what's it about?
It's about. Why am I forgetting? It's about a woman who gets left. She's pregnant. She gets left in a Walmart by her fiance.
What?
He like leaves her. Yeah.
I don't remember this at all.
And then it's about her struggle to. Kind of figure out who she is and keep boundaries and do all this stuff and survive and have a baby and all that. And I cannot remember the name of it.
I want to see that.
Someone will know. And okay. I forgot what it is, but I like her. She's a great, she's a great actress. Mm-hmm.
She started in Leon the Professional when she was really young, which I still haven't seen. But I think the problem with Natalie Portman is that she gets, most people jump to, at least millennials, jump to the Star Wars prequels and her as Queen Amidala, which is terrible that she kind of like got stuck in that, you know? Because George Lucas is just giving her this garbage dialogue that she had to shovel out. And it's just, it's so bad that kind of became the defining image of her career. But yeah.
So I'm trying to think about why, I didn't think about this ahead of time. I'm trying to think about why I resist her, you know, like kind of like resist. I think part of it is V for Vendetta bothered me.
Really?
I
was down with that one.
I think that she was in the earlier, her earlier films, she's a little bit hypersexualized because she looks like a young girl, basically. Mm-hmm. She's very small.
Yeah.
Beautiful, but she's very small. And I felt like that I got that feeling in the earlier stuff that she was kind of being exploited, even though she's a great actress.
She really is. Like, that's what people forget when they jump to Star Wars is that she has a lot of great performances. Mm-hmm. Closer is one of my favorite performances of her. That's a really graphic film. Black Swan as well. Yeah. So there's a lot of, she's been nominated for an Oscar twice and she won, a total of three times she's been nominated and she won one for Black Swan was the one she won. But she was great in Jackie, playing Jackie Kennedy a couple years ago.
Yep.
And then my favorite role of hers, which I haven't mentioned yet, is Garden State. She's so good in that movie because really that whole movie is like designed around her because leading up to it, there's just this like deadness of Zach Braff as the main character. And then when she comes on screen, she's like the burst of life that like carries the movie from that point on. So I think she's just great in that.
What are you listening to?
The Shins. You know him?
No.
You gotta hear this one song. It'll change your life, I swear. Oh, I'm sorry. You have to, gotta fill out your forms. Conundrum. Think you could, maybe listen while you could?
I can handle it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So she's legit. I'm down with Natalie Portman.
But yeah. So she's a great
actress. Something
actress.
About her that you weren't quite like on board with. I get it. It's okay.
I don't know. She's all right. She plays like some really dark characters.
She does. Yeah.
So it's hard. So sometimes it's hard to like an actor, even if they're doing a great job playing dark characters.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she's great. She's a great actress.
And you'll notice her pop up in Thor Tim, when you make your way through those. So she's good in that. She's good in that. And then the film also has Oscar Isaac, which I'm a big fan of his work. My favorite role of his, of course, is Inside Llewyn Davis, which Dan Baker absolutely hates and thinks is one of the most pretentious movies ever made. And I'm sorry, Dan, but it's one of the Coen brothers' best films. I love it.
So. I love Wes Anderson and then hate Coen brothers.
Thank you. It's okay. We love you, Dan. You know we do. But most people will know him as Poe in the new Star Wars trilogy, but I think he's a great actor. I don't think that this role, like, you know, is like a place where he can really has the opportunity to shine. Like, you know,
well, that's one of the things. I know we get to this every time. Is it, this was critique for a lack of character development.
Yeah.
And he's nothing. He doesn't offer anything to us.
He doesn't. I know. So no, this is not the one performance you're going to want to go to.
It's about Miss Portman.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's what this film's about. Don't try to get anything from any other characters.
But not just her, because what was really cool about this movie too is that the majority of the screen time is led by women, by all women. And I thought that was really cool. Like, I mean, obviously, it's unfortunate that that's rare. I hope we get to the day in Hollywood where we don't have to say that that's like somehow uncommon, but like this team that goes into the Shimmer is made up of all women, and I think that's great. And so you have Jennifer Jason Leigh,
she was awesome. Yeah, I take it back. Was. It wasn't just all about Natalie. Yep. Jennifer Jason Leigh was awesome in this movie.
So good.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Scary even.
She was. She had that reserved, like, you just never figure her out. And then in the ending, like, super creepy, like how that all resolves itself. No spoilers. Tessa Thompson, from Westworld, which I've been super into lately. But that's another one. Actually, if you're, we were talking about AI, that goes deep, deep into like all those AI existential themes. Gina Rodriguez, Tuva Novotny, those are all these women that the majority of the film is made up of. So overall, I think the acting is solid. I think everybody brings something to the table. So yeah, solid work all around. What'd you think of the music, Tim?
Because I didn't even think about the music.
You didn't think about it? It has those big, like, bomb, 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 you know? Like,
oh, yeah, I
didn't
think about it because it got annoying.
You thought it was annoying. I thought it was okay. Really cool.
It was okay.
My theater couldn't handle it because my speakers were
buzzing?
Crackling like the whole time.
That's
but
terrible.
I know.
Don't tell me. Where were you at?
It was at the mall. The mall, yeah.
The mall is that bad.
It was the only place it was playing.
I know. I went there too. I know. So we had the same crackling, I'm sure. Terrible.
But that just shows the how intense that the music was, that the speakers couldn't even handle it. But it was good. It was loud. It was eerie stuff. And it was a really nice accompaniment to the tone, because I think the tone of the movie is this really cool mix of genres that all sort of work together. You got your thriller with the creature feature. You got these genuine horror scenes, like you were saying, suspense, like Hitchcock suspense.
They're scary.
Super scary. Like, especially the videotape scenes, like all of those. I'm just like, no.
That didn't scare me as much as...
That one freaked me out, like, to no end.
I felt like, you know, we reviewed It, what, 6 months ago or something? Or more than that, like 8 months ago?
I stand by it.
And
still
It
a
is
movie.
A great movie.
Thank you.
And it's scary. But there were scenes in this movie that to me were scarier than It. So if you're like a horror fan and you're like, I don't know if I want to do sci-fi, you should. Because this film is scary.
Yes. Yes. And I'm a huge horror nut. You know that. I'm really excited, by the way, side note, of A Quiet Place, John Krasinski. He's directed it.
I saw the preview for that.
Yeah, it's coming in a couple of weeks, and that is getting great reviews. So, but yeah, legitimately scary movie. But it's also a love story. It's got a lot of human drama. And then the ending, like, touches into 2001 territory. Like, really weird, mind-trippy stuff. I love it. Yeah. So it's like all these different mix of genres that pretty much work together. So, yeah. I was down.
You dug it.
Yeah.
I thought that they brought up a bunch of questions in this flick with allegory, with symbolism, with kind of like eighth grade science. So we start out, we're at like Johns Hopkins or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's teaching a class and it's like, she's showing like these medical students, like what mitosis looks like or something, like where cells divide, you know? And I'm like, these are like medical students. They just spent 4 years like doing bio, right? And you're showing them cells dividing and be like, check it out. They're dividing. How cool.
But that's for us.
Well, it's cueing us into it, but it's not like, but that becomes an allegory for the entire film though.
That's true.
The idea of does division destroy, does division.
It's pretty on the nose symbolism. I'll give you that.
So like that, and then like refraction. So like everywhere you look, there's a glass with water refracting someone's image in it.
Yeah.
And like even the shimmer actually refracts. That's what it's, you're seeing it just distorting stuff when you look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So like the idea of refraction, I'm like, okay, Bill Nye, thanks a lot. We're learning about refraction today. Well, the light gets bent. So that's great, but yeah. It's not like, this isn't heavy ideas.
Sure.
Like these are basic ideas that they're using. It's more like, you know, those kind of questions that like make you ponder a little bit, but start out real easy. So like I always like, you know, ask a middle schooler, could God make a sandwich so big that God couldn't eat that sandwich? And they're like, whoa. So like we were talking about Arrival, which mm-hmm. is another one of these films where you have to go into something because something that may or may not be evil, good, who knows what happens, and people were successful or not successful.
Mm-hmm.
But within Arrival, because I really liked Arrival. You did not, right?
I thought it was okay, but go ahead. Can finish your thought.
So the point I'm making is this. Yeah. Arrival has a very sophisticated idea behind the science fiction, which is that the way that we express language or the way we communicate shapes our view of everything. So time and so the aliens are communicating in a way that is outside of time,
language,
so
yeah,
right, so they're able to communicate in ways that are like not present, past, future, but that just are. Because their language is that way, even the sentence structure it's different than ours. So it's this like really complex idea about language and culture and forming of societies and how do we interact. And then it has multiple cultures that have different languages trying to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like really well thought out. And these are more just kind of like big questions, you know?
But here's the thing. Yeah. Going back to Arrival, I think that's what I didn't like about it was how cerebral it was but at the expense of like just a really good story that affected me. So that's why I think Annihilation is actually the better movie, even though it might not have as deep of themes.
I think Annihilation is better from a suspense standpoint.
Yeah. And from a story and journey standpoint. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe, but I don't feel like, so I think like when you look at the hero's journey, right?
Mm.
So what is, I guess the quest is to like save her husband, or is the quest to save herself, or is the quest to understand the shimmer,
or is the quest?
Yeah. Because I don't feel like the quest is very well defined.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. I think not just me, but I think a lot of reviewers had with this film
mm-hmm.
was the director is so skilled attention that they can have an undefined quest and still draw us into the story.
It still works, right?
It still works because, yeah. Like, you know, we talk about story all the time, tension in every scene.
Yep.
They manage to have tension in every scene,
yes.
but without having a defined quest. And so to me, like, there is some kind of quest going on, and either we're not following the cues that we're supposed to be getting, but that was, a lot of people are struggling with that, and very intelligent people, much more, you know, than myself. Are really something like, well, what are you searching for? What is the quest?
Sure.
And yes, of course, it could be like multivalent, you know, like, hey, for this. And it might be great coffee talk afterwards. But to me, I kind of wanted more.
Sure. That's fair. I get you. It's not a perfect movie. All right. I agree with everything Tim said, to lesser extents. I also, if I'm being critical, I didn't love the framing device where it starts off at the end and you keep going back to that. I think that's pretty, I know that's being petty, but I think that's basically just like voiceover. Like it's the exact same thing. You're just literally pausing to explain things. And I hate that.
You're not the only person that felt that way. So other reviewers thought it was cheap. And they said, this is, if your plot absolutely needs this device to function and you get more from it,
mm-hmm.
then use it. And that's not cheap. But if your plot can function without this and you're using it, then you're creating some sense of drama, but not actually adding to the story at all.
That's exactly. And that's what they teach you in film school and related to voiceover. It's like, if you can do it in a way that actually enhances the story, great. But if you're just feeding pipe to your audience, then you're just like wasting everyone's time. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I will say that like the mix of genres, even though I think it's cool how many like genres are represented, it does approach that line of silliness just because it can be a little jarring, like going from like, you know, love story to drama to creepy bear stalking around a house. Like there were points where like someone nearby in my theater started laughing just because it starts to get to the point where it's like, what the heck like is all of this? You know, I don't think it crossed that line, but I think it approaches it. So I will say that as well, if I'm being critical. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't love the last scene, but that's super petty.
There's just a lot going on.
There is, yeah.
And I think that, like, as far as our emotionally for us, there's a lot going on. Now, that said, that like this is not faithful to the book, really.
Now, and of course, we haven't read the book. I don't know, I didn't. You didn't read it, right?
I talked to somebody that read the book.
Okay. What did they say?
That's almost like reading the book. If we were in high school, that would be reading the book.
Yeah.
No, they said that it would be impossible to kind of turn it into a film that had that was viewable.
Mm.
But a lot of it, and I read some reviews that described the book. So there was all kinds of elements that were missing from the characters that they had in the book that we're not being exposed to here.
Mm. So the person was disappointed in the adaptation? Is that what?
I think it was like, this couldn't be adapted.
Okay.
So like, no matter what you do, it's going to be not like the book.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Well, why don't we dive in to the themes. Let's go deep, man. Okay. So Alex Garland, like we said, is a pretty deep thinker and he introduces a lot of big ideas in the movie. So Tim, what were some of the philosophical, theological threads that jumped out at you that you want to explore here?
So we get exposed to a couple things. The first scene is a meteor thing that crashes into a lighthouse. So like immediately we get two symbols, meteors and lighthouses. And it made me think of Inuvatu.
Think of what?
Alejandro Inuvatu.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because he's got meteors on in like a bunch of his films.
We miss Inuvatu. When is he coming out with another movie?
I can't remember. He got an Academy Award. We didn't see it. Did you know that?
Wait, what?
Yes, he was awarded an Academy Award and we didn't see it because it was a special Academy Award that was in a category.
It was like a technical thing.
It was like some kind of technical achievement award.
Yeah.
And because he did something that was like virtual reality or something.
Okay.
And that's what he's been working on. So we're like, where's this guy? He's like been creating virtual reality. So he gets it. They only reward it every so often. But let me get back to this.
Sorry.
Okay. So, but anyway, apparently this is a reference even within the book to the Virginia Woolf book, which is like to the lighthouse. And there's actually a card within the film, like a, what do you call it when there's a card in between scenes?
Like a title card?
Title card.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's like a title card actually that says In the Lighthouse, which is a total direct reference to Virginia Woolf's book. And that book is like really getting into art and relationships and how we create art in the midst of relationships. So we have that. So talking about art and symbols and how do we create art and what makes good art. And can we, so we're like led down that rabbit trail, which I don't know if that yields anything. Maybe it does.
Well, I wouldn't have thought about it until you mentioned it, but I mean, it fits now you mentioned it. Yeah.
Then the other stuff, like the cell division is like throughout this movie, there's like images of cell division over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the idea being like as cells divide, they could be, the first one's a cancer cell from a woman, a 30 something year old woman. It's like basically the seeds of her death.
In that scene of the class you're talking about.
In the classroom. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know what this is? This is taken from the cervix of a 32 year old woman. Yes. Natalie Portman taught you that. So, but the idea is like, does within who we are as we're like, cause we're always dividing, right? Cause we're creating new cells.
Yeah.
In who we are, do we have the seeds of our own destruction? And that's like theological, right?
Yes.
And so as we get into it, like that's not a new idea. That's like right out of Genesis. But the idea is like within us, even like in a genetic way, this movie would say, yes, we contain our own destruction and we wouldn't. And then there's talk of what's the difference between like slowly making choices that destroy ourselves versus suicide? Well, they're very different. Jennifer Jason Leigh goes on this big rant about that.
Yep.
So that we might actually buy... as we're creating, you know, cells are dividing. As this division is occurring, we're actually sowing the seeds of our own death.
I love that conversation, how she talks about how we self-sabotage ourselves in all these subtle ways that we don't even think about, right? Like we just suddenly take up smoking or we, you know, start crashing that relationship. And it's just like we just are gravitated towards self-sabotage. Yeah.
So like one of those, like for me, that's a big theme is this idea. And then this idea of dividing uniting and dividing can destroy. You have and this is a spoiler, sorry.
Okay.
Can I spoil?
You heard it.
Here it is. So she has an affair with one of her coworkers while her husband is gone, I'm assuming, but the chronological screws me up, but I'm thinking that's what happens. He leaves and she gets lonely and she has this affair with one of her colleagues.
Yep.
And the idea is that her physical uniting with this colleague actually is destroying her relationship with her husband. There's like this subtle movement.
Yeah.
So the idea is like as she is pushed away and they've been divided.
Mm-hmm.
She connects with something else and that connection is destroying him.
Mm.
And so I thought it was kind of interesting that uniting, dividing, that things would be mirrors of themselves. Like it gets like, you can go forever on this kind of junk, right?
I love it.
So that's kind of fun. What else? What did you see, John?
I wanted to touch on that one, what you kind of mentioned, where you remember that scene where they explicitly talk about how God made us. They're laying in bed. Oscar Isaac and Natalie Portman are talking, and they actually, like, you know, Oscar Isaac makes some reference to God. Everything he does is like perfect or good or something. And Natalie Portman specifically says, really? Because our bodies are basically the ways our cells and our bodies are designed. They have a genetic flaw in them to age and die. And like, all you had to do was like remove that one flaw, that one piece, and we wouldn't have the aging problem that we have.
Right.
I thought that was fascinating. And so that stuck with me because it was so explicit. And that made me think about, like, as I was going through the movie, what really stood out was that idea of how, when you combine that conversation with the whole scope of the shimmer and what the shimmer does to our bodies and what's eventually discovered at the lighthouse, to me, the whole thing became like, how vast the universe is and how vast the wisdom of God is and how small we are in the grand scheme of all that, right? Because, like, I even thought back to Ex Machina, which is a really clever play on words, because obviously the phrase we're used to is do Ex Machina. So that movie is basically about this one guy, like, you know, playing God with all these, yeah, like, robot toys. And Annihilation kind of reminds us that so often we're playing God on Earth. We think that we're the center of the universe. But if you change, if you tweak our genes, like, just slightly, if you refract our DNA, yeah, suddenly we're lost in just like chaos, and like the whole universe is suddenly like foreign to us. And so I guess for me, I started feeling kind of like the end of Job, you know, where God comes and just is like, look, dude, like, you don't get it, like, how big I am, how small you are. But what Garland doesn't touch on, and what we know as Christians, is that actually makes the gospel so much more beautiful, because this God of this big universe actually does care about us, and he's willing to take on our flesh and save us from within our genes and our cells and even become one cell, which is, you know, Holy Week. Here we are, right? That's our story. And so it's just incredible to think about how big God is and how small we are, which Annihilation reminds us of. But we need to be reminded of that for sometimes, but I think it's comforting too, because God walks in our shoes. I think it's beautiful. So that's kind of where I went with it. It's just how lost we become with just the slightest tweak, which God has complete control over in our creation. So, yeah.
So what do you think about the idea of like environment and our relationships change us?
Mm.
So like, you know, we talk nature and nurture, you know, that's like the big kind of classic debate. So within this film, there's like the idea is like your environment is physically changing you.
Yes.
And your relationships, the people that are close to you, are physically changing who you are.
Mm.
And the big question is this place going to kill us, or is it going to make us go crazy,
right,
and kill each other? And so what was funny is, like, I began to, you know, as I've been thinking about it, I'm like, is the shimmer more reality than outside the shimmer? You know?
I like it. Yes.
And there's this lighthouse, right?
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to spoil the lighthouse, but the lighthouse is supposed to be this beacon, right? But in that beacon, we are confronted with the deepest, scariest version of ourselves. And so the deeper you get into the shimmer, right? The very heart of the shimmer,
yep,
which might be truth, right? The light.
Yeah.
It might also be the same place that we have to do the, like, where we are the confronted with the, our own destruction,
our own shadow self.
So that our perception is always distorted, and the shimmer is just basically a big refraction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that our perception is distorted.
And you see that with that one character who starts off basically the first one to befriend Natalie Portman. And then we see where her journey goes, which,
yeah,
and how the shimmer has changed her and how she interacts with people. It's, mm-hmm, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's like a bunch of that. As far as like the theology of it is like, what is, I mean, this, I think good film gets us down to like these anthropological questions. Like, what's, uh-huh, the nature of the universe, right?
Yeah.
So is the universe good or bad? And then do we have evil in us? How much evil do we have in us if we do have some?
Mm-hmm.
How do we have the image of God? Are we perfect? Are we are we pristine in some kind of way, and that we're just trying to have higher enlightenment? Or are we like damaged from within, like every cell? So this gets like, these are anthropological questions. Like, who are we?
Yeah.
Who is God? Where are we? What's the nature of this place? And then, so this film is asking these really, really big questions. And I think they're the questions that we have to ask, you know, in the world here, right? So how is the world inherently dangerous? Is being here going to corrupt us?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to find some kind of solution here to something? Do our relationships corrupt us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we being formed by those? Is our environment corrupting us? Is the seeds of our own death within? I mean, those are like all those questions that this is, yeah, asking. So this is very philosophical, very psychological.
Yeah.
Do I have to confront the shadow self?
Yeah.
in order to be liberated.
To liberate from the ego. And I mean, you could go crazy with that. Yeah.
Right. And who am I? Like, what is my essence? Like, what is left? If I'm combined or taken away from something, what's left of who I am? Right. Like, if I remove something from me, who am I now?
Uh-huh.
So all that kind of psychology, theology, science, I guess, gets kind of thrown in together. And I think there's no resolve at all.
No, there's no resolve, but it works. Like, I feel like you might be cheating it just a little bit. I totally understand what you're saying about the science and you know, like explaining cells to med students is ridiculous. But I think like he goes deep enough with those themes that it's fascinating to me. And we're able to have a pretty deep conversation about it. So I get what you're saying, though. It's like it kind of does seem like kind of throwing a bunch of ideas to the wall and not really coming to any one. I get that, but.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's kind of like, like a fresh. I feel like being a freshman taking a philosophy intro philosophy course and then sitting around for 4 hours at a coffee shop, pseudo sophisticated talking about it.
Yeah,
which is kind of how I operate anyway. But
that's kind of one of my main criticisms of Ex Machina was that like instead I wanted Oscar Isaac's character in that movie to be like this really intelligent guy, and he really was just like this Mark Zuckerberg-y like pot smoking guy, just sort of like randomly talking about philosophy and stuff, and while in the midst of F bombs and like, dude, you want a joint? And it was like, what the heck? But I think that's kind of his approach to those ideas sometimes. Yeah.
Well, he's your Kurtz. Like, this is one. I mean, all these movies are just Apocalypse Now, right?
Yeah.
They fly him into the jungle, don't they? It's like Apocalypse Now. Man.
Yeah, but he's no Kurtz.
He is Kurtz, man.
When you finally get to Kurtz at the end, Marlon Brando, I mean, you are in the presence of greatness. And I feel like they purposely made, Alex Garland made Oscar Isaac's character just like a college dope. I don't know. Like, who happened to be a genius on the side, but really he's just like a dude who smoked too much pot in his dorm room. I don't know.
I think this guy's obsessed with the Heart of Darkness, man. I really do. Yeah. I mean, like, Ex Machina, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But there are these ideas like, you're gonna be out here for this long and you're not allowed to have any contact with the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of the contract. You've been selected. I mean, this is Martin Sheen's character, right?
That's true. Yeah.
You've been selected as the person that can do this mission. No one else can really do this mission. We're going to have you come in and we're going to see if you can do it.
Yep.
And you're going to have to prove yourself to this person.
And the journey to the lighthouse. I mean, it very much feels like that.
The journey to the lighthouse. Yeah, right. So like, I really do think like this is all coming back to Joseph Conrad. And then maybe if, I don't know how, what his, what he reads, but maybe also Apocalypse Now.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like, this is becoming quite the, the Heart of Darkness is becoming like this major movement in film.
Yes. So. All right, man, this is it. Final thoughts on Annihilation and your letter grade. Go.
So I thought Annihilation was much better than like having two showtimes at my local Megaplex or whatever. I thought it was a good movie. I thought it's worth watching in the theater because it's suspenseful and because the visuals are excellent.
Yep.
So I would say go see this movie, enjoy this movie. Hopefully it'll bring up some ideas for you. It is scary. Mm-hmm. So if you're afraid of, if you get scared easily and you don't like that, don't go to it. I would give it a B, because I think it doesn't wrap up anything. It doesn't deal with any of the questions that it asks. It just asks them sophomorically. And so because of that, I would say, oh, this isn't very cohesive. Otherwise, like, I think it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good film, and you'll enjoy it if you go see it.
Beautiful. I would say overall, I totally agree. It's a must watch, especially in the theater, because it's just the visual impact of it, the music, and the suspense. Like, it's definitely a theater movie, and see it while you can, because it's on its way out of theaters. To be fair, it came out like a few weeks ago, like almost 3 or 4 weeks ago. So we were catching the tail end of it. We had that last minute adjustment. So we weren't really on top of the ball with it, but it's still playing by us. Hopefully it is by you. So definitely see it in the theater. But yeah, I think it's a fascinating film that deals with a lot of genres. It goes deep. It just puts you really in this mindset of questioning like existence and everything. Like, I remember I walked out of the theater. I suddenly realized I was the last one left in the theater, and that creepy music's playing over the credits. And I just remember like walking out, like questioning, like, is this room about to like flip upside down? Like, I just had this really like out of body moment as I was walking down the steps of that theater. And that's kind of the frame of mind that it puts you in. So overall, great acting, writing, directing. I got a few minor quibbles that I mentioned, and Tim mentioned them as well. But overall, I'm going to land on the high end of a B+ for me.
Oh,
so
good.
Going B+.
That's excellent, man.
So that's it. That is our show today. That's Annihilation. Thank you everyone for listening to my Wrinkle in Time rant. I'm sorry. And I also realized that I did not say spoiler alert before any of that, but you know,
it's like saying a spoiler for blue cheese. Okay. It's our, that's what it is.
Yes. I'm grateful we made the switch. And before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out to one of our most loyal podcast listeners named Ron. Thank you so much, Ron, for constantly listening to our podcast and giving us really great feedback. Ron's recently sent us an email to our email address, which is podcast@cinemafaith.com. And he was interacting with our review from a while ago of Lady Bird.
Yeah.
He had really great insight. And it was just, we just really appreciate him taking the time to write to us and kind of give his thoughts. And so we would love for all of you to do the same thing. Write us. Tell us what you didn't like about the movie, what you thought we totally botched, like what your ideas of the themes that we talked about were. We'd really love you to send us an email to podcast@cinemafaith.com. It means a lot to us.
Plus, I love it when people write in because we have like really a great audience.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because you're the audience, but like they're thoughtful. They watch films as carefully or more carefully than we do. And so it's really cool. And then everyone has a different background.
Exactly.
So they can bring something new to like, oh, maybe somebody has a background in physics or in this case, like a background in medicine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they can bring that to their viewing, especially with sci-fi. I'm a history major, so I bring nothing to sci-fi whatsoever. But the idea is like these different perspectives are just awesome. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people will bring something up and go, oh, I don't want to be critical. I don't want to. No, that's not. We're way open. We're totally
Absolutely.
Open. We're like, oh, I didn't see that.
Yes.
And we're open to that. And we hope that like this would be a community of folks that would learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it's about.
Absolutely. Thank you. And so, yes, please write to us again one last time, podcast@cinemafaith.com. We may even read your feedback to us on air. Ron specifically asked that we wouldn't. So,
okay,
so that's
Go
why
read it. Go
I did
read it.
Go
read it on the site.
Yeah. But yeah, so, and if you haven't already, please, please, please take 2 minutes and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and leave us just a quick little review. It does not take long. You just search for us on the podcast app, you write a review, love the show, keep up the great work, something like that. Takes 1 minute and you're done. And that like instantly moves us up like 20 places on the charts. So we so appreciate
it
if you would take
that.
That's how it works. They've designed the whole thing around reviews and 5-star ratings, which sucks because everyone is pleading in the outro for people to do that. And it does get annoying. I listen to like 20 podcasts all day, you know, and like everyone says it, but it really really does help. So
you're not wanting to do it right now, you're listening and you're like, oh, that's another thing to do, please do it. It would be great. We would love to see more people get to hear what we're doing.
That's what it does.
Yeah
brings other people in.
Yeah,
and we'll be back in just a couple weeks. We're in the rhythm now of 2018, and our next podcast, Tim, I haven't cleared this by you yet, but
Ooh.
We probably should do Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One, because
we got burned by him last time. You liked the post.
Like the post, but this, it has actually, early reviews have come out and it is very positive, so I don't think we're in Wrinkle of Time.
What did I say about it last time? Didn't I say it was your grandpa made a film about video games?
That's what you said. Yeah, I love that.
I it'll be good. I'll
I
watch
think it'll
it.
Be good.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in, man. And you guys watch it too.
Uh-huh.
You
By
guys
the way,
watch it too.
I just read an article about it in Entertainment Weekly, and they were what was fascinating was that what Spielberg was saying, that all of his production, because the movie like has a lot of, it takes place in like the 80s type like virtual reality. And so all of his production team was trying to slip in little things from his films, you know, since he's like the king of the 80s,
right?
Like, and he was constantly like vetoing it, and so like, but a few of them slipped through the cracks in the editing process, because like one of them got a Gremlins reference in, and it was already like had been edited until he realized it, and he was like, well, I guess it's staying in. But he was so averse to like those self-referential, because he wanted to honor, he's like, I'm not the only one who made movies in the 80s, you know, but his whole team was like trying to sneak it in left and right.
So he killed it. Didn't he kill Atari in the 80s too? Did you see this film?
Which, what was it?
So his E.T. video game, I thought it like killed Atari.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
So there's a documentary, I think it might be on Netflix, I can't remember what it's called, but it's about that. So maybe he's like trying to, you know, after he killed Atari. Maybe he's trying to come back and it wasn't him.
Atone for it.
It was a bad video game with a pressing release date. But anyway, you can go watch that film too.
So Ready Player One is next. And then the next month after that, we will cover Infinity War because you heard it here. Tim agreed. And then that's like two big budget crazy movies. We're going to have to find some like random like art house indie to cleanse our souls.
What's Kaufman doing right now?
Yeah, Kaufman. What was his last movie like? Where has he been, you know? Crazy. Yeah, I know.
Don't know, man.
With it, I was always, Charlie Kaufman always promised that he was going to make a horror film. Like, I remember him reading that like 2 years ago. I'm working on a horror film, and I just kept trying to imagine Charlie Kaufman's version of a horror film, and it just delights me
it's
to
like
no
all
end.
Bright colors. And yeah, I guess that's more, yeah, I guess, yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what that would look like.
Well, exactly. So we'll see.
So who do we have, man? Where's Linklater for me, man? I'm waiting for this guy.
Linklater, yeah.
I'm just, come on, make something.
He makes these movies that come out in March. Like, where is he? Like,
the guy? Yeah, so we do. These are big movies for earlier.
Yeah,
season.
These are big movies. That's what we're saying. I think this is going to be a really special year in film. So we're excited. Thanks for joining us on a new season. Keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.